We get the hour underway by welcoming into the program from the Boston Sports Journal, Sean McAdam. Hello there, Sean.
Hi there, guys. Been a little while. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Been far too long, but we wanted to wait till there was some really big news. This might not have been what we had in mind, though.
Yeah, I mean, there had been plenty of Benintendi talk throughout the winter, as you guys know. I wrote about it more than a month ago. It's been covered by guys nationally. So there was always the feeling, I guess, that it could happen at any point. But then when it got as close as it is now to spring training and nobody had heard anything for a while, everyone sort of assumed that maybe that talk had quieted down. But it heated up in a hurry and in a complicated way last night.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the basis behind it. They don't save a great deal of money, as I understand it here. So is it perhaps more about getting some value for Andrew Benintendi while they still can?
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I think you're going to get sick of hearing this word over the next couple of years, but this is all part of the sustainability to which Chaim Bloom often refers. And that is a twin track of improving the major league roster and product on the field, but also making sure that you're constantly restocking, in this case, more stocking the minor league system. This is not, it's a development line that has certainly slowed down of late. There had been a lot of guys traded away, and so there has to be a rebuild of the minor league system. So I think that everything Bloom does, he does with not single-mindedness, but with two goals, and that is trying to get a little better on the field. And I think he's doing that gradually and perhaps not as dramatically and quickly as some people would like, but balancing that with improving what he refers to as that pipeline.
Now, seeing the reaction of a lot of people on social media and obviously upset, extra sting, I think, because it was a year to the day after the Mookie Betts deal. But yeah. Chaim Bloom was not hired to turn the Red Sox into the Tampa Bay of the North. They will not treat this like a small market team, but it is an adjustment phase.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's kind of a perfectly cynical narrative for our time that some people are advancing that this is it's not going to be long before the Red Sox have a payroll of $65 million just like the Rays. That's not going to happen. In fact, this year they're going to probably be above $200 million when the season starts. Now, the issue, of course, is not how much are they spending it, it's how well are they spending it. And by any measure, they're currently not spending it well because they're going to have a top three payroll and a team that, if lucky, may be somewhere middle of the pack, 12 to 15, if you're ranking the 30 teams. So that doesn't square up. They're going to be paying another $16 million to David Price next year. I say another, they didn't last year because he opted out, but they're on the hook for half of what is left of his deal. They're going to pay Dustin Pedroia $13 million, at least towards the CBT threshold. It'll be 12 and change to Pedroia himself for not playing at all. So there's $30 million that they're getting no return on. But as I said, they're going to have a payroll of $200 million. It's just that it's not wisely allocated or very efficient.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Let's discuss some of the return for Benintendi and start with young, 4 months younger than Benintendi, Franchi Cordero, a guy that they talk about as having a big upside and, a big breeze when he swings with 110 strikeouts. And is this right? 110 strikeouts and 284 at bats?
Yep.
Woof.
Yeah. He's he does not get cheated up there, and when he connects, the ball can go 450 feet. He's got plus raw power, but he is very much what scouts would say toolsy, which means there's a lot of skills to admire or things, aspects of his game that he can occasionally do very well, but often those guys have not put it all together, and that certainly applies to Cordero, and he's been doubly hampered by a string of injuries, none of them major or anything chronic, but enough to keep him off the field the last couple of years. I think the hardest thing in evaluating this deal right now, 24 hours later, not even 24 hours later, is that we don't even know who the players to be named later are, obviously. That's why they're classified as such. But the Red Sox haven't necessarily zeroed in on three particular names. They're going to get one player from the Mets and two from the Royals. And it may be years before we know how good those presumably minor leaguers and prospects are or are going to be for the Red Sox. So, you know, it's one of those deals that does not look good now in the present, in the short term. And it may be a while before we can really assess how good a job they did in trying to maximize value for Benintendi.
Yeah, what do you know about this young pitcher, Josh Winkowski?
Yeah, I talked to a scout last night who had seen him back in 2019 because of course, he didn't pitch last year without a minor league season, and he was sort of too inexperienced to get an invite to what was then the Blue Jays alternate training site. But having seen him late in 2019, the scout told me that he was 93-95 with his fastball, a changeup that he liked that was mid-80s, and either a slider or a cutter, and he has since added a splitter as a third pitch, and the feeling is if he can develop a third pitch, then he can have a future as a starter, probably more of a back-end guy, but an intriguing body, tall, lean body with some power and sink to the fastball, although not great movement, I'm told. But, you know, another, I don't want to say lottery ticket, because that you say that of a lot of international kids that you're getting at 16 and 17, and there's so much more development to come. But, you know, this is something of a project that does have some upside.
A lot of people looked at the trade of Benintendi and thought, well, maybe now there's some room to bring back Jackie Bradley Jr. But as you pointed out in Boston Sports Journal, that's probably not going to happen for a couple of reasons. One is the young guy who's waiting in the wings, and the other is the fact that JBJ is looking for, what, probably at least a four-year deal?
Yeah, I mean, I could see Jackie Bradley Jr. and Scott Boras having to come down off that ask. I can't think anyone would be lining up this late in the off season to give him a 4-year deal. I think if a best case scenario, he could get 3. I think it's more likely it's 2 and an option somewhere. But the Red Sox don't have the kind of money to bring Jackie Bradley Jr. back and stay under that first threshold and not trip the penalties for the luxury tax, which they would prefer not to do in a season in which, you know, they're not really ramped up and going for a pennant. And then secondly, you have the presence, as you alluded to, Rich, of Jaron Duran, who's had a terrific winter playing winter ball in Puerto Rico and shining in both the Puerto Rican finals and then the Caribbean World Series. So I think there's probably an ETA of around the All-Star break for Duran if everything goes well. And I can't see them committing to the kind of multi-year commitment that Bradley would want at this point. He, you know, Jackie's 30. This is his best shot at free agency. It comes in the middle of a pandemic. It's not great timing, but you would think he would want to get a multi-year deal somewhere. And it just doesn't seem that that length of commitment makes sense for the Red Sox as much as they could use him coming back.
The Garrett Richards deal is interesting to me. Obviously, a guy with great talent if he can stay healthy. $10 million is a big chunk of change, but it's only a one-year commitment. How do you assess that pickup for the Red Sox?
Yeah, I think that's probably an accurate read. He's the guy that, when he's healthy, has shown in spots. I mean, I can compare him a lot to Nathan Eovaldi as a guy who really wows everyone in terms of his pure stuff. You wonder why, with the quality of that stuff, he isn't more consistent. And then you realize that a lot of it is in both their careers have been compromised by repeated injuries. With Evaldi, it's been Tommy John twice. So he's had the major challenges, but Richards also had it. He tried to avoid it, eventually gave in and had it, admitted now that he wished he had done it sooner and would have lost less time. But there's really some parallels there. So, you know, if he's healthy, just as when Evaldi is healthy, he's a pretty good middle-of-the-rotation guy who still leaves you wondering, you know, with the quality of stuff he has, how does he ever get hit around? But a valuable enough middle-of-the-rotation piece when he's healthy, that's been the key.
A rare Red Sox-Yankees trade. I like Adam Ottavino. Where do you see him slotted in? Is he the eighth-inning guy?
I wouldn't be surprised if they have him close. Barnes seems to be the kind of guy, even though he says he wants to close, and I'm sure he does, a guy that has not performed as well in that ninth inning, last guy left kind of role. He's pitched far more effectively as a high-leverage setup guy in the eighth than he has on the occasions when they tried him in the bullpen. And I don't hold that first half of 2019 against them, because they tried to make him that rover where he'd come in to any high leverage spot in the last couple of innings. The problem there is you're always facing the heart of the order. That's a lot of pressure on somebody. In a perfect world, you find some sort of hybrid between you're up by one, two, or three runs, it's the ninth inning, so your closer comes in, versus how you might deploy him elsewhere to help shut down the biggest rallies of the game. But I think Barnes might work better in the eighth inning and have Ottavino as a guy that, even though he hasn't closed a whole lot, he's a veteran, he's 35, he knows what he's doing, he's been on the big stage with the Yankees. I don't think that would bother him, and I think they'd rather keep Barnes where he's been more effective.
Sad to see the news yesterday of the passing of Billy Conigliaro. It's always tough to be the local guy, I think made even tougher when you're the local guy who's the younger brother of the much beloved local guy in Tony Conigliaro. But there was even a third Conigliaro brother who was a pretty good baseball player as well. But it takes you back to a time when those guys could grow up in the shadows of Fenway and have dreams about starring there.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable family saga, Rich. You wonder what Tony C's career would have been like had he not been struck by that Jack Hamilton fastball in August of 67. We know the enormous potential he flashed at an early age, you know, coming in and playing for his hometown team as a teenager. What a thrill that was for him. His dramatic comeback from that beating, his home run on opening day in 69 after missing almost a year and a half. And then to come back in 1975 with one last comeback try and actually put up some pretty good numbers at the beginning of the year for that Red Sox team. And Billy has who passed yesterday, has the significance of being the first player ever selected by the Red Sox in the amateur draft in 65.
Right. He was
taken in the first round. And then as you referenced Richie, who played some pro ball as well. And to think that, you know, you had three brothers who grew up about 10 or 12 miles from Fenway Park, and to have them, you know, play for as teammates. I was reading today, and I'm sure unless you had a year where you had Tommy and Hank Aaron playing together, and Hank did most of the big lifting in that relationship in terms of the production, I think Richie and Billy combined for 54 homers, 38 and 16, I think, in 69 when they played together. That could be a record that is never broken by brothers playing for the same team. So, sad passing yesterday, and Billy had done a lot to take care of Tony when he had suffered his heart attack and had so many medical issues in the last years of his life. It's just another sad ending for that family.
On a brighter note, how's that grandson of yours doing?
He is doing just terrific, Rich. I am down for another daycare / babysitting visit next Tuesday. So there'll be more obnoxious pictures coming up on those for those who are unlucky enough to be my Facebook friends, who have no doubt heard and seen way too much of Lucas, but that's the price of doing business.
No, I don't think you can see too much. He's a good-looking young man. I look forward to seeing more pictures.
Thank you.
Sean, always good to talk with you. Appreciate you making time for us. And as we pick up things here in the baseball season, I hope we'll be doing it more often.
I hope so, too. I always enjoy coming on. Thanks for having me, Rich.
Thank you. Sean McAdam, Boston Sports Journal, here on Downtown.